Good evening. I'd like to call the December 20th Planning Commission to order. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Vice Chair Keen?
Here.
Lon George is absent.
Would you follow Commissioner Mack, please lead us in the flag salute.
Ready? Again. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
They moved it on.
They moved the flag on us. Everybody faced the wrong way tonight. Okay, item four is the agenda review. Any of the commissioners want to change the order of anything on the agenda tonight?
No. Looks like applicants are here.
Yep. Community comments and suggestions. Anybody that would like to address the commission on anything that's not on the agenda tonight, now would be the time to step forward. Seeing none, we'll move into written communications. There was a revised minutes for December 6th meeting, and
I do have a comment.
Okay. And a list that was in the last staff report for the council, listing all the permits and where they stand, and I thought it might be pretty interesting for us to have that, just so we know what's going on. Okay. Consent agenda, approval of minutes for December the 6th. Mr. Mack?
Yeah, I have a comment on page 4. If you can change my comments, it was following the non-public hearing item, and it'd be on page 4. It wasn't that I did not support.
Excuse me, Mr. Mack. Can you talk a little bit louder, because I can't hear you?
Okay.
Thank you.
Test. Is this mic working? How about now?
Okay.
I'm going to borrow Mr. Kings.
Same problem as last week, or last time. Got to get a mic that works. On page 4, if you can change that sentence or modify the sentence that does not support the transitional housing component, what I didn't support was the length of stay. I wanted to, if they did do a transitional housing component, it would be for, you know, less than a year, if it's truly transitional. And that's my comment.
Okay, is there any other comments, any corrections, additions?
Can you speak into your microphone? It's really close. Thank you.
Okay. Is there a motion for the minutes?
I move to approve as amended.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, moving on to public hearing items 8A. Continued public hearing to consider development code amendment 15001, ordinance relating to small cell telecommunication facilities located citywide. Applicant Verizon Wireless. Matt?
Absolutely. Actually, at this time, Vice Chair Keene, it would be staff's recommendation, since we don't have a representative here for this first item yet, that we actually move item 8B up before 8A.
Okay. I don't We could have done it at the first of the meeting.
Yeah.
Is that...
That's fine.
Fine with the commission? Okay. Moving on to 8A. Another one's listed as 8A.
Yeah, that's a typo on your agenda. I apologize for that.
Consideration of conditional use permit 16003, demolition of existing building, retaining walls, and trees for the construction of a new first floor office building and two second floor residential units located at 227 South House Inn.
Matt. Absolutely. So I'll preface this presentation tonight by letting you know you might hear it in my voice a little bit. I am actually regaining my voice. I lost it last week due to illness, so bear with me if my voice does go out. We're taking item 8B first. As you mentioned, this is consideration of conditional use permit 16-003. Here's an image of the project site. So as you can see, the subject property is outlined in red. It is zoned office mixed use and is located at 227 South Halcyon Road. It is currently developed with about a 1,500 square foot residential-esque structure, but it is being used as a, or was being used as a, as an office. Surrounding land uses to the subject property include commercial to the north and west, and then residential to the south and north and west, and then south and east. That should say east. So the proposed project under the conditional use permit in front of you tonight is the demolition of the existing 1,500 square foot structure, site grading and tree removal, as well as retaining wall removal on site for the construction of approximately a 3,600 square foot two-story structure. The ground floor is about 1,700 square feet, 1,500 square feet of office space, and then 200 square feet or so for operational space. So that would be your equipment areas and things like that. The second floor is actually an 1,800 square foot. That's where the residences are proposed. And that includes the two-bedroom dwelling units. So here's an image of what we're talking about. Here's the proposed site plan. We'll start with the driveway. So essentially, if you were to cut this site plan, the site in half, and flop the driveway over and flop the house back over, that's essentially how it's developed today. So what the applicant's proposing is to actually demolish the entire thing, regrade the entire lot to where it's flatter at Halcyon Road, and then construct the new structure on the south side of the project with the new driveway, which does include the permeable pavers with the concrete strips between, and then 10 total parking spaces and the trash enclosure as well. So the project site is zoned office mixed use. The primary purpose of this zoning district is to provide areas for the establishment of corporate, administrative, and medical offices and facilities, as well as commercial services that are required to support major business, medical development, as well as multifamily housing. So this project does comply with that purpose. And the mixed-use development, including the professional office, are permitted in the zoning district with the approval of a conditional use permit. So talking a little bit about the architecture of the project, so here's an image of the front elevation from as viewed from Halcyon Road. So it's using large expanses of stucco as well as some of the lap siding to kind of mix that up a little bit. We're looking at multiple roof lines, the exposed corbels here on the ends, or rafter tails, however you want to look at those. Different dimensions of windows, this kind of exposed stained wood that matches the proposed fencing as well. And then earth tones on the building, so your beiges and your greens, as well as the composition shingle roof. With regard to access and parking, so access from the site is, from South Halcyon Road. The applicant was encouraged by staff to explore the opportunity to consolidate some of those driveways that are in that area, because there's three different parcels right there, each taking their own access. So we did kind of ask the applicant to do that. They did go out and actually seek to consolidate some of that, but ultimately that wasn't a viable option with the neighboring property owners. With regard to parking, The project does require one space per 250 square feet of floor area for the office and two parking spaces per two-bedroom unit. So with the 1,500 square foot office, that totals six spaces. The two-bedroom units, that totals four spaces for a grand total of 10. And so they are meeting their parking requirement. In the staff report, I do go in talking about the covered parking. So if this were a multifamily parking or a multifamily project only, we do require covered parking. However, we do have a section in there that says for mixed-use projects, you do not have to provide covered parking. It can all be open-air parking. And actually, when it was reviewed, when the project was reviewed by the ARC, they actually looked at that and recommended that the covered parking be removed because at that point in time, the applicant, it was their understanding that they had to provide that. And so we made that clarification, and the ARC recommended to remove it. The applicant subsequently updated their plans, and that's what's in front of you tonight. So there's discussion on the covered parking, but that's not reflected in your plans. With regard to landscaping for the project, so the applicant is removing a total of five trees, and they're replacing it with two Chinese pistache trees, one located adjacent to the trash enclosure, and then one in the area that was expanded when the covered parking, covered carport was removed. So originally, these parking spaces with the carport went all the way to the property line, and then taking off the carport allowed to reduce some of that backup room and get some extra landscaping in there. There's also drought-tolerant ground cover, and all of this will be required to meet the state water model water-efficient landscaping ordinance. And members of the staff advisory committee and the architecture review committee were actually in support of replacing the existing street tree that's out there. If you've driven by, it's not in the greatest of health. It's a rather wide, wide base of a tree, wide diameter tree, and we've had sidewalk issues in that area in the past. So both the ARC and the SAC were in support of removing that and replacing it with a new tree and a proper tree well. In terms of advisory committee reviews, the SAC did review the project on November 30th. We talked at that time about water conservation and methods of doing that. The landscaping, as I mentioned, the street tree, and then the significant grading that's happening out there, and some of the special conditions we added in to address that. Overall, the SAC was in support of the project, and the conditions of approval that are in your resolution came from the staff advisory committee. And then on November 21st, the Architectural Review Committee actually reviewed the project as well. Points of discussion at that meeting were the stucco wall on the south side of the property, the former covered parking. You'll see that I added the former in there because it's obviously not reflected in your plans. And then different methods of reducing the impervious surfaces on the site. So that's where the permeable pavers came from in the driveway. Overall, members of the ARC were also in support of the project, and a couple of additional conditions of approval that are in your resolution. With regard to CEQA, it was determined the project is exempt from CEQA per sections 15302 and 15332 of the CEQA guidelines regarding replacement or reconstruction, as well as infill development projects. With regard to public notice, a notice of public hearing was mailed to all property owners within 300 feet of the project site. It's posted at the Tribune, posted on the city's website, at City Hall, and the project site as well on December 9th. Tonight's agenda and staff report were posted at City Hall and on the city's website in accordance with the government code. And staff received one comment letter, and that individual is in the audience tonight as well. And with that, that concludes staff's presentation tonight. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Commissioner Payne, do you have any questions of staff?
Yeah, I do. First of all, I just wanted to give a commendation for the developer and his engineer for preparing these plans. These are probably the best set of plans I've seen come across my desk in 2 years that I've been on the commission. Very thorough, nicely done, everything answered, and so now I can go on and tell you what I have. I would just like to see those three trees along that property boundary retained, and even if we had to reduce one of the parking spaces along that parallel parking there to accommodate that. I just hate to see all those trees come out of there, and then it starts looking like a commercial zone district instead of mixed use with residential. And I think on the parking, I don't think that would be a problem. I'm a stickler for more parking usually, but I think with the mixed use on there, you're going to have people gone in the daytime, so those four spaces are going to be vacant. And in the evening, an accounting firm probably isn't going to be open at night or on the weekend, so reducing one parking space to me in trade for keeping three trees, I'm in favor of. And I do agree that that tree on the street, it looks like it's already dead, needs to be removed. But my recommendation would be not to put it back in the same place because the water meters are right there. So if you move it maybe to the other side of the property where the landscape area is, would be better.
Sure, I can actually address that street tree issue. So we did talk about that as well. Originally, there was a tree that was proposed down in this southwesterly corner of the project site. There will be sewer utilities in that location, and so it was the recommendation of the staff advisory committee to actually leave the street tree where it was.
So you got a trade-off there, either the water lines or the sewer line.
Yep.
Who knows? And I just wanted to make a comment to the developer, too. You were looking at what the existing resident being over 1,500 square feet, and I don't have it written down, and your new residential units are going to be approximately the same size, maybe the difference of 183 square feet. So don't forget to apply for your exemption from your school fees based on that. And if there's any access and circulation fees, you should be exempt from that residential credit. The other thing, the windows that are on the... Okay, and I do have to get the map out. On the south side, it looks, you know, without unfolding this all again, it looks like you have the doors to the two units, and then there was higher windows. Are those the restroom windows? I just have a concern about having residential windows opening onto the next door neighbor's driveway, since we have a zero lot line here, and for privacy, if they're the restroom windows, I guess I could look at it the way it's designed, where those it isn't, it's bedrooms. So I don't know if you can, well, I guess you can't adjust that to move the windows or put skylights in there, because you have to have a window in the bedroom. But I just had a concern when you're doing a zero lot line and you don't have any setback and your windows are right there looking off into the adjacent property owner's windows. I just think that's...
Could I interrupt you a minute? We're on questions of staff. Can you make comments when we go on
this? So I don't know if that was even looked at.
Yeah, so actually, although the bottom floor is actually right on the zero lot line, if you look at plan sheet three, on the inside second floor plan, there is a deck space outside of each residential unit as well. So, yeah, they do those bedroom windows do point over looking at that driveway, but there is some buffer distance of the deck.
Yeah, I realize that, but I still felt that when you have a second, when you're putting in a second story unit adjacent to a single-story unit, you're looking right down into somebody's private windows. And I wondered, too, if there was any comment about the existing resident. It looks like it's in nice shape. I don't know whether it was a frame one before and then stuccoed over. Was there a possibility of it being moved versus demoed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would defer that to the applicant in terms of what their plan is for the structure.
I just hate to see more stuff go into the landfill. That's all I have right now.
I have a couple of questions for staff. Are there overhead electrical and telephone utilities on that east side of Halcyon?
On the east side, yes, there are. They are being required to place those underground, as well as there's a the utility pole on the south southern side of that, right down.
Right here.
Right. I mean, I thought there was. I didn't. I just.
That's being required.
Maybe I missed it. I didn't see. My comment was, let's make sure we at least, as long as all the sidewalks and everything torn up, let's at least get conduit installed, because at some point in time, those are all going to be underground in there, and it's silly to force them to tear that out in 2, 3, 4 years and make sure we get conduit installed. But if one of the conditions is already they're going to be undergrounding those overhead utilities, I think that'll satisfy my question there. The other question I have for the applicant, I'll wait for their presentation and address them. Thank you.
Questions for staff? I assume for the residential units, there's a private open space requirement, and I didn't see that anywhere in the plans. Can you tell us what that is?
There is a private open space when you have a planned unit development. In this case, we don't have a planned unit development. It's just a conditional use permit, and I believe those actually do kick in with 4 units being the minimum, and with the 2 units, we don't have that requirement on a project of this size.
But usually we do try and provide that. Even though I think the decks would probably suffice that, it's kind of nice to see the calculation on the plan addressing that issue. Did traffic review this at all?
Traffic Commission did not review this. The anticipated trip generation coming from the project is below the level that requires a traffic report and the Traffic Commission to review the project.
One of my comments, and I'll hear from the applicant, of course, is the alignment of the driveway apron with the drive itself. It, in doing these kinds of projects and seeing these go forward, usually it matches the same width. Is there any reservation on from the city of not making it match?
Not during the staff advisory committee review. We did, the fire department was kind of glad that the width of the driveway, once you get on site, is a little wider. They have a little more room to work. But there wasn't any concern between the differentiation between sizes, no.
But being 20 feet, that would be okay. I mean, that's something that traffic would look at, is also the on site circulation and how the vehicles are maneuvering. And then my last question to staff is noting our parking stall requirements. Minimum stall is 9 by 18, 9 by 20?
You're correct, 9 by 18, yes.
Yeah. ADA is 9 by 20.
I don't recall off the top of my head, but something to that effect, yes. So there would be the opportunity to allow a little more overhang in the ADA parking space as well. The building official looked at this as well and didn't have any immediate concerns regarding that, or at least concerns enough to condition the project, feeling that we could work some of that out as building permits come in.
Okay. And then last question, street trees. How many are required?
Typically it's 1 per 50 feet of project frontage. In this case, we do have one where it's located, and that's why we were talking about replacing that one and not requiring another one.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for staff.
Thank you. I don't have any questions of staff. I'd like to open it up to the public comment and have the applicant come first, please.
Yeah, Matt with Sibyl Associates, Grover Beach. I think Matt's already done a great job explaining the project, so I'm open to answer any questions, or I know you have a few questions. Maybe possibly I could answer them.
Okay.
Try to, anyway.
Okay. Mr. Payne, do you want to start out?
Pretty much said it already. Again, I'd like to come in, make a commendation on what a great set of plans. What is the standard drive lane width? I mean, you've got it noted here as 20, and then you've got 11 foot for
yeah,
the
20, 20 feet that's for two-way, yeah, in and out driving. And then we did 11 feet on those parallel parking because 9 feet yeah. is typical, but we wanted a little extra.
So you can get in and out of your vehicle. But is there a possibility that you can save those three trees along there?
I mean, we'd like to, but the parking requirement, you know, we needed that parking there. But if, I'm not sure how much leeway we have to maybe eliminate one parking space.
I'd just like to see the trees remain, you know, along that property boundary. It kind of gives a more rural, residential, mixed use.
Yeah, it would soften that side a little bit.
If we don't start saving some of them, we're just going to end up with commercial all the way down that street. And I hate to see that happen. So, on the square footage for the residential units, you're less than what was on the previous residence. And did that the existing residence, does that have two bathrooms in there or just one?
Just one.
One? I was just curious because you're only showing one bathroom per unit, so you really weren't increasing the water use there.
Right, yeah.
But with one restroom, you did. I have no other questions at the present time.
Okay, thank you.
I just have a couple questions. Should be hopefully pretty easy. Under the resolution, under condition number 82, it talks about a new water lateral.
Mm-hmm.
And is it your plan to be installing three separate water meters?
I think we're going to do one meter. We had a talk with the city. We, you know, everybody got together, utility guy, and we decided one meter was the way to go.
Okay, but then are you going to be sub-metering those residentials? And
yeah, we'll set up a, you know, a little private metering system for the two units upstairs.
Okay. And I strongly recommend it that
yeah.
way. Obviously, from an issue of cost and metering and reading meters and things
right.
like that from the city, certainly I understand, you know, and appreciate the single meter being easier to work with over time. But,
right.
For someone that deals with multi-unit real estate on an ongoing daily basis, being able to isolate and, you know, identify, you know, individual water use, particularly in a drought situation, you've got someone in tenant in Unit A that's using 10 units of water a month and a tenant in Unit B is using 30 units of water a month. You want to be able to address those,
right.
That water use and be able to identify where that water use is actually going. So my personal preference would be to meter them separately, but I understand where you're going. But just make sure that condition, you sub-meter, don't forget to sub-meter those so you can identify and track
okay.
that. The other, more of a comment than a question, but in the letter that we had from your neighbor, one of his concerns that I think is obviously very, you know, legitimate is actually his closing statement at the end of the letter, saying he's concerned that during the construction period specifically there could be, you know, an impact on, you know, underground utilities and some of his property and stuff like that. His request would be that you'd be required to repair, restore to its prior condition without trying to make a specific comment about the aesthetics of his location. I would hope that you would recognize that and either to prior or better than prior condition should that take place. A hope is obviously that there are no damage or any, you know, direct impact. And along that line, make sure whoever the contractor that you're working with works with the neighbors to really clarify, you know, the real busy days or the real noisy days and that kind of disruption, because there's nothing more frustrating than to come home at the end of the day and be blocked or have some kind of incident or situation
right.
that you have been
yeah.
made aware of. And that kind of communication with the neighbors will carry you a long way over the course of that construction. Those are the only two comments that I have. Thank
All
you.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Mack.
Do you know what the width is of that existing drive approach?
I think it's 20 feet.
It's 20 feet because it's scaling more like 16 feet. My comment, like I said before, with staff, it's not in alignment with the driveway. So the maneuvers, as you make your right-hand turn in and someone coming out, I mean, you're having to adjust to get in further into the driveway. I see a conflict there. Are you opposed that? It looks like the only reason why it's where it's at is because of that existing tree.
Yeah, we're trying
to get around
that tree.
And if we can move that tree to the other side of the drive approach, then we can get that drive approach
Yeah, we could
to
slide
it
over. You know, one of the other things that came up was that there's another driveway approach on the neighbor's property that we were getting too close to. And I think it's, I don't remember what the distance is, but I was trying to keep that distance, you know, from each driveway approach going down the street. You know, as you go to the east down Halcyon, or north, I mean, just on the other side of those three water meters, there's another driveway approach. So I was worried about getting too close to that. That's kind of why we pushed it over a little bit also.
Yeah, I've seen them a lot closer than that, like 5 feet apart or 5 feet off a property line. So,
but I mean,
my
I
comment
agree.
There is...
I agree. I think it would work better if we could slide it a little bit more and make it more straight in.
Yeah, I think we need to do that and move the tree to the other side. A tree is presenting a problem, too, as you're coming out, blocking your sight distance and whatnot. It's just...
Yeah, maybe the tree.
My comments are for safety, the people
right.
using the facility coming in and out. I think it's the better thing to do. And then my comment on parking standard size, can you address that in terms of an 18-foot depth and
yeah,
what the building code says about
I figured 9 wide,
by 20?
Yeah, I always figure 16 to the curb and then a 2-foot bumper overhang. So that gives you the 18 feet.
So the ADA one, if it needs
now,
to be
ADA,
20 feet, you can go into that 9-foot
yeah.
section?
Yeah, we could jog a little bit.
So here's my next faux pas, is the parking has to work to get it to balance.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is the spaces 1, 2, and 3. They're only 20 foot long. And all the parallel parking that I've seen in the street and throughout the city is a minimum of 24 feet
mm-hmm.
in length so you can get into it. I don't know how they're getting into these stalls. So I said that to say this. I don't see the parking working to get the count that you want with those three stalls. You may be losing a space anyways, but we still need to get the project to park.
Mm-hmm.
I like the project. Don't get me wrong. The project, I think... The architecture is beautiful. The drawings that you've done, the architecture looks great. The layout looks great. But I don't think the parking works. Those three stalls don't work. Staff can probably correct me if I'm wrong in terms of our parallel parking requirements and the length of the stalls.
I'm looking it up right now.
Okay. Next question I had for you, can you explain to me on how your... I'll call it an area separation wall on the property line is being built. Doesn't that have to be a two-hour wall?
It's a one-hour wall.
One-hour wall?
Yeah.
That's not an open railing or anything like that?
No, it's solid. Yeah, we have drywall and then stucco and to create the one-hour wall.
So I guess my question is code is allowing us to do that?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to go up to the roof height?
No, you just need a 30-inch parapet, and of course it's a deck up there, so I have 42 inches from the walking surface would be considered the roof. So then from that point up, you need a minimum of 30 inches, and I show 42 inches because it's a deck railing.
I think what you'll find when you actually get into it is the building wall, you're showing an 8-foot, 10.5-inch setback to the property line. It may end up being exposed, is what I'm getting at, whether it meets the code or not.
What's exposed?
Proximity. Does the wall along the living room, the bedrooms, and the living room on the units on the second floor have to be rated due to proximity on the property?
No, because it's residential, so as long as we're at least 5 feet away from the property line, then we can have openings. And I think we're about, 8 feet, 8.5 feet?
Okay. That's kind of what I'm getting, because it is mixed use.
Right.
You got the commercial below.
If it was commercial upstairs, then yeah, I think we'd need at least 10 feet in order to have openings along that side. parallel with the property line.
Yeah, I'm just going to want to double check that.
Right.
And then the trash, and the trash, is it the intention for trash trucks to come in here, or is the trash going to be taken out to the street?
Yeah, I think we'll roll it out to the street.
Okay.
Because what I'm showing there is just little, the plastic containers you just roll out, not a big trash bin.
So that brings me to my next question. It looks like it's set up for the residential units, so where's the commercial trash?
I don't see a lot of trash from the commercial. It's all office space.
Are they all sharing the same trash cans? Because I only see three.
Right. That's what I thought. This particular project's identical to my office in Grover Beach. In the two office spaces that we have, there's never any trash. A little bit from the residential, mainly recycled material, and that's about it.
So my concern is that it works.
Right.
Do the residents think that they each have their own trash can then?
No, what I see is everybody sharing the trash cans. So we have...
It looks awfully small. You do have room in that island to move that and make it a little bit wider and get maybe at least one more trash can in
we
there.
We could, yeah.
So I'm just...
I was just trying to get a little landscaping there. I like landscaping, so I didn't want to lose too much of it. So just trying to create a little landscaping on that end piece.
And I hear you. And we do have a 9-foot, 6-inch section along stalls 7 through 10. Whether a couple more could be located for the residents right down below their stairs or...
Well, one thing that happened too is originally I had the trash kind of attached to the building, but it was underneath the cantilevered second floor, and mm-hmm. I guess we can't do that.
Okay.
So that's why I got moved over to where it is currently. But we do have a little room, we created some more room when we took the carport out. We could maybe get another trash area over there in that landscape area by the stairs that go up. When you get down to the bottom there by the handicap space, could maybe get another little trash area there.
I don't know how the other commissioners feel about that. I know being in rentals before, if you don't have a big container that you're sharing,
right,
3-yard container that you're sharing, when you're sharing a small, everyone's fighting over the capacity of that thing. And
yeah, I was just using my office space as a reference, and there's just never any trash coming out of it. And it's two units, it's identical building, identical size, and so that's what I was using as kind of a guide, I guess.
Okay. Well, that concludes my questions. Thank you very much for
all right, thank
clarifying.
You.
And actually, Vice Chair Keene, if I may jump in real quick before questions continue. So I did look up our municipal code requirements for parking stalls for parallel parking, because you brought up a good point. I don't recall ever seeing a standard for parallel parking depth, and it turns out we do not have one in our code.
Yeah, what I used was a City of San Luis standard. They have so that's how I came up with the size, at least the length anyway.
Yeah, just to clarify with staff, is we have talked about it on some of the previous projects, and that question's come up before, and I believe the answer that staff gave in the past has been 24 linear feet to be able to get in on a parallel situation.
And that could be coming from the engineering standards. I wasn't looking at those. I was just looking at the specific development code section, in which case... But I don't recall that off the top of my head. I could continue to look into the engineering standards for that as well.
Okay.
Would it help to produce that document that I found, the City of San Luis standard, or can't follow that?
Absolutely.
That's how I came up with the length. I just kind of checked their street parallel parking standards. They had a couple of different lengths, actually, even a shorter one than 20 in some areas, but...
Commissioner Martin.
Yeah, if I may weigh in on this. We've got two, I'm going to say, complimentary requests from two of the different commissioners.
I don't have a strong opinion between 9 and 10 parking spaces. Commissioner Fowler Payne talked about attempting to retain a tree and being comfortable reducing the parking, the number of parking spaces by one. I'm wondering if one of those three parking spaces was removed, it would allow a couple of things to happen. One, we could end up with longer parallel parking spaces, and we would also end up with more room to allow for, I'm just going to say, a more generous trash enclosure. Where I agree with Commissioner Mack, your history down in Grover Beach, and I'm certainly not doubting that at all, being what it is, it would not surprise me at some point in time there may be a need or the change, whatever, to have an enclosure that can accommodate another, you know, dumpster or something along that line. And I think that having a larger enclosure, even though on the short term or in the immediate, you know, the opening future of the development where the tenants are getting along and they're sharing, there's not a lot of trash generation. At some point in time, if it's not a CPA firm that's there, but it's another business, although in our new world there's less paper being generated and more things that are paperless, but I do think that we may be able to accomplish this if we make on these conditions. We reduce the parking from 10 spaces to 9, we increase the length of the parallel parking spaces, and we increase, you know, just do a modest increase to the enclosure to allow for a future, an addition of a future container in there. I'm comfortable with those alterations and making those as additional, you know, conditions. And not knowing exactly where those trees are, my hope would be that...
Yeah, you can see one of them right now. It's like a little kind of a cloud.
Right, and I would leave
number two there.
Yeah, I would leave it to you to figure out which tree is the appropriate one to retain and which
probably
is the one you're going to lose in order to really maximize the benefit of these changed and, you know, specific conditions along that. But I'm comfortable with making those changes and those conditions in order to, I think, accomplish the desires of these two commissioners.
And Commissioner Martin.
Preservation of the trees.
At least one of them.
Yeah. I think I scaled that off at home, and I thought that two parking spaces you could get between all those two trees in the front. The third tree is all the way to the back, and I don't see any problem with saving anyway. When I was there today and walked it, and they're, all of those trees are like right on the fence line, so they're not protruding, and they're high enough where cars can go under them anyway. But and I'm in favor of reducing that parking by one. Like I said, you've got a mixed use and your tenants aren't going to be there in the day, and the business probably isn't going to be there at night on or weekend. So I think, and I'm a stickler for always wanting more parking, so I don't see a problem with that. I think, you know, on the trash enclosure, you'll probably have a gardener anyway, and he's going to take away most of your green waste, so you're not going to have green waste. You could probably get away with a small can of that and maybe pick up another just regular trash.
You could do a real small green waste, and that's plenty.
A small green waste and maybe one more trash can there, and
because
you've got that pop out. So,
That's a good point. Yeah, that would work.
My turn.
Oh.
When you have three tenants in a building like that, who pays for the trash?
Usually, the owner would pay for the trash. The owner of the building.
The way I look at the spacing of the trees, I have no idea what it actually looks like, but it looks to me like reducing one parking spot. It just looks like they're in a position where it's going to be difficult to accomplish what we're trying to do because of the way they're placed. The trash enclosure was one of the things I was going to discuss too, because when somebody's parked in here, it'd be hard to get them in and out. I see it looks like there's plenty of room, especially if they're going to take them out to the street. I was thinking that the trash truck was going to come in there.
Yeah.
Could you tell me what that symbol is right there?
I'm not sure what that is. It must be a line that was... It might have been a parking location at one time, and we moved the parking around a little bit. That's what it looks like.
Okay. I noticed it on this drawing, too. In fact, this is where I saw it first.
I think what I did is I made, at one point I had the parking length tighter, and I made it longer because I was worried about it actually working properly. So that was an old parking line.
Okay, that's all the questions.
It should be deleted.
That's all the questions I had. Any other commission questions?
I think I measured that off, and there was about 24 feet, like I said, between those trees and where you could have, the only one you'd have to eliminate was number one, if you retained those two trees.
So the tree that's in the number one space, maybe keep that tree?
Keep that tree. You can keep the other one, too, because there's enough space between...
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Those two trees to be able to... I mean, when you're going to parallel park, you're going to be on your way out. You're going to come forward and then back into it, so you're going to... And if you can't park in that,
yeah,
then
you can just slide
lessons.
slide number two down between the two existing trees.
Right.
Yeah, that would work.
And then that gives you more space where the trash is. I'm just on favor of retaining those three trees along that line. People don't have as big a cars nowadays anyway.
It would definitely help that side, keeping the trees, you know, just the basic look. And otherwise, it's a little stark, just a big fence
so
line.
It becomes commercial instead of residential mixed-use stuff.
Well, one of the things I'm concerned about is all this pavement underneath the drip line of that tree, trying to get it watered. And so I'm not exactly sure how we can address that. But that, to me, is going to have an impact on those trees.
Yeah, right now the existing building is like just a couple of feet away from those trees currently. I don't show the building line on there, but so in a way the trees are used to a little bit of concrete around them, or you know.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they look like they're surviving, and they probably haven't been watered in the last 5 years.
Yeah,
plus there's a dirt buffer on the other side of that fence where they pick up moisture. And those are the root system of those are going to go.
One of the trees is a Victorian box, and those things are pretty hardy. I think the one in parking space number two, and there, it's a pretty hardy tree. I can't remember what the other one is in number one.
One more question, and I always try to picture it as if I'm driving there and I want to go there.
Right.
So I pull in, I follow the arrow on the right, and let's say the only parking stalls that are available are 1, 2, and 3. How do I make a U-turn in the parking lot and come back and do a parallel parking job? I mean, I went parallel park on the opposite side of direction. Hey, my mic's working. So do you understand my concern there? A lot of times what they do in parking lots is leave one of the stalls open and stripe it at like a turnabout so you can get out in a forward motion. I'm just wondering,
you know,
we got the parking stalls there, but how do we use them?
We could create a little more room between the parking stalls in the back there so you have more room to maneuver around to come back out if all the parking stalls are full. I did have actually a lot more room when we had the carport back there, and then we created more landscaping and pulled the whole thing over to where it's just 25 feet between the parking stalls. At one point, I had 30 feet there, which would give you a little more room to kind of maneuver and turn around and come back toward the parallel parking.
I think you'd have that problem even if you didn't have those parallel ones there. If you pulled in there and those spaces were all full, you wouldn't be able to turn around and get out. I think pulling it back towards the property line, there's no one's back there anyway who's going to see that landscape buffer along there.
I think you're real close to the solution. I mean, I don't want to design the project for you, but a lot of times what you'll see is, you know, people will use the ADA space to be your turnabout. But if you're able to use the clear space that you don't park in to, I don't know if ADA allows you to do that, but, you know, that you can pull in because it's required to be 8 feet for the van, right? If
right.
you pull in, then you can pull out
yeah.
and come out in a forward motion, but you got the sidewalk blocking it from a vehicle
yeah,
perspective.
We're going up on the sidewalk there with that ADA.
unloading area.
I guess if the ADA was located somewhere else in the bank 7 through 10, you can use that clear space. Or I don't know what the solution is, but you're real close to making it work.
Now, is there, with parallel parking, can you, is it, you can only parallel park if on the right, not on the left, right?
Well, you parallel park on the lane that you're traveling and the direction that you're traveling. So if you're coming in, you can't parallel park against traffic. So it should be on the right if you wanted to come in and parallel park. In this instance, it's only as they're coming out of the parking lot can they use those three stalls, is as they come out. Or you're going across traffic.
Right. Which wouldn't work in a public street, but we're on a, you know, private parking lot.
So I guess I just, I want to have a comfort level before I say, yeah, it works, and I'm not feeling it yet.
Do you feel like it would work if they push 7, 8, 9, and 10 back towards the property line, at least another 5 feet, and that still leaves almost 5 feet or off the property line? You have there 9, 6, so you're almost at 10 feet there. That would give you 30 feet in the center.
Yeah, I can't remember what we have. That landscape area is like 11 feet, I think. So I could get it as close to the property line as like 2.5 feet, probably.
Did you look at another parking configuration? I was just doing the math on that. Let's say you kept parking stall 7 and 8, but then you go ahead, you know, you get rid of parking stall, you know, 9, 10, 4, 5, 6, and you go straight in. You go, you know what I mean? You do.
Yeah, I played around with that.
Or perpendicular to the rear property line, you can get 5 stalls in there and 2 off the right, and that's still 7, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And that allows you actually to put all your parallel parking on the right-hand side next to your sidewalk, next to your building, and your driveway moves over.
Yeah, the driveway is where it is because I'm pretty sure there's a rule about the driveway coming out on the street being too close to the neighbor's driveway. So I had to move it away from that. There's a certain distance that I had to get.
And I can actually answer that. So the driveway separation requirement is actually 22 feet between the different driveways. And actually going back to the parallel parking question, so the minimum parallel parking length is 20 feet. According to the highway design manual, the standard would be 24 feet in depth. So wanted to address that point. The distance between the two driveways has to be a minimum of 22 feet.
So distance between driveways, you're saying, has to be 22 feet?
That's correct, according to the engineering standards.
So that's what pushed that over.
I think this design is much better with the drive in the center. Chances are you may not even be using these parallel ones with business. I mean, I think I read bookkeeper or whatever, so you're not going to have.
I thought it'd be kind of interesting, too, the little curve coming in. And
well, you wouldn't want that parking right up against your building either. That's not going to be very attractive. If we're off of parking, I have one other question about the water meter, though. On your plan, you're showing 3 meters, but if you only do 1 meter, our water meters are set up where penalty after so many units. So how would that apply, Matt?
Absolutely. So because it's actually a mixed-use project, it would be a commercial meter, so it wouldn't necessarily be subject to the current tiers that the residential meters are. And in fact, those conditions addressing the water meter, I believe, are addressed in the conditions of approval as well, whether the applicant wants to do 1 or 3 and the different requirements thereof. But it wouldn't necessarily fall within those tier rates until further water restrictions are triggered.
Well, I see what you're saying, but I kind of have a problem with that. Everybody else is put on that tiered water level, and then all of a sudden we've got some people that are exempt from it, like what you're saying on this one, but I understand what you're saying. I just don't really go along with it.
The other thing I'll say about jumping back to the parking real quick, so there is a section in the municipal code that does allow for, in mixed-use projects, the reduction of parking requirements up to 20%, given the mixed-use nature of the project, so I did want to alert the commission of that, given, you know, further deliberations and public hearing at some point.
Did you take that into consideration already on the 10 that there is there, or you haven't?
No, they meet the minimum code requirement with 10, with the 10 spaces, so 20% could go down all the way down to 8 if the commission decides that that's applicable, or make it 9 or yeah. Whatever.
Well, that, I don't have a problem with the parking at all, reducing it by 1. It's going to make the entrance more attractive because you're not going to have a parking right.
Yeah, give us more landscape.
Facing the street, you could do a little more landscape or something there.
Well, as a side note, I mean, if you had a one-bedroom as opposed to two-bedroom, you only need one parking stall. But on the same token, I really see this as a mixed use. You have commercial down below, and you have residences above, and let's say the commercial's done at 5 or 9. I mean, they're not using their parking stalls. You have extra parking stalls. So in my mind, I can support a parking reduction because it truly is a mixed use. It's a vertical mixed use, a first of its kind. This is great. But my issue here, again, is making the parking that we do provide safe for people who come in and use that. Can they turn around and get in there? We have more fender benders in parking lots than we do on the public streets. And does it function? So I would support losing a parking stall and making the parking work over providing more parking and having it not work. Now, I don't know what flexibility we have about that drive approach, but I see the left-hand turn movements in, you know, and the right-hand turn movements in colliding with anyone who's trying to come out. And right now, I don't see the driveways really 20 feet apart. Right now, I see them. Just with my scale, it's probably about 8. You know, with my finger, it seems like it's too close as it is, and not meeting that requirement.
Yeah, I think it's right at. It was like 20. I don't have it dimensioned.
Because I see your existing line there says existing drive, right off the property line. It looks like 3 or 4 feet off the property line.
I just don't have the dimension on there, so I'm not sure exactly. But.
And that's why I asked the original question to staff, did traffic look at this? Because I would think that they could support a driveway moving further north, or the width moving forward north, so they're safe in and out of the driveway. I think that drive approach, the line where it is on the south is fine. I just think it needs to be wider on the north side.
Questions
from
the applicant?
No.
None. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
I have one speaker, Mr. Sterling.
I'm not going to address anything that I already wrote to you in the letter, so I just wanted to address a couple of items that was discussed by the commission this evening. Number one is the issue of the trees. Any retention of the trees, I would be in favor of. So if you could retain 1, 2, or 3 of them, I would be in favor of that. In regards to the driveway, the only lot frontage I have on Halcyon Road is the driveway directly north of this lot. As such, my water meter is in the public sidewalk that fronts this lot. So. And this is also where I put my trash out, everything else. There's no place else for me to put it. You move the driveway to the north, and I'm going to lose all that area both with the water meter and with the any provision for putting my trash out. So I would prefer, if you're going to approve this project, that you would leave the driveway in its current configuration. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to address the commission on this project? Seeing none, I'll move back to commissioner comments. Commissioner Mack, would you like to go first?
Well, I'm going to reiterate what you heard me talk about. I think design-wise, I'm really happy with the architecture and what I see. It looks fantastic. It comes down to safety of the automobiles and coming in and using the parking lot, and also ensuring that we're not creating problems in the future with regards to trash and or vehicle and pedestrian and vehicle collisions trying to get in and out of the parking lot. So the things that I'm in support of and the conditions I would like to see is the alignment of the drive. The tree is a problem where it's at. The city street tree really needs to go on the other side. I noticed that there is a 20-foot view triangle showed on the lot to the north. And with that tree there, we're not getting it out. We're not getting that viewing angle coming out of our own driveway here. So that needs to conform to that 20-foot view angle. I'm for providing at least two more additional trash containers. I think there should be one for each entity, one for each unit, and one for the commercial, especially if you're not providing a common three-yard or container, but then you're getting a trash truck to come in the back. Right now these trash cans are being put out to the street, and I think it should be each individual's responsibility to get their own trash out and have their own trash. I don't think each one needs to have a recycle container and a green waste. I think they can share that. I think the parallel parking needs to be enlarged to 24 feet minimum in length. And I think if we can show a way that you can turn around or demonstrate that you can turn around and parallel park as you're coming out, I think it can work. I just don't see now how you can get in to the space number 3 as you're coming out of the parking lot and parallel park into that. But again, that's where your civil engineer would come in and show you the maneuvering areas and things like that. So I think we can condition it and move the project forward with those three comments.
Thank you. Commissioner Martin?
Yeah, I like the project as well. I'm ready to make a motion. I do have a couple of additional conditions that will be included with this, and I think that my comments will be included at that point.
Thank you. Commissioner Payne?
Well, if you're only doing 1 meter, this where you're showing 3 laterals, that's going to reduce down in size anyway. So you're still going to have, and you move that tree, you still have enough to increase the approach of that driveway if you wanted to, but I don't see a problem. I don't think you're going to have that kind of a problem. This is a business. They're not going to be going 15 miles an hour through there. They'll be pulling in and pulling to the back. And as we talked about, I'm moving number 7 through 10 back towards property line. That opens up more space in the center for turnaround. And if you can't parallel park in a 24-foot distance, if you need parking, I can do that. So that's the only comment I have. And I like the project. I love the architectural work you've done on it. I think your site plan was great. And very informative. Thank you.
Thank you. I concur with the comments of the commissioners, and I really like the project. I like the architecture style of it. It's really, really nice. I would go along with removing one of the parking spots under the 20%. We just need to get some more work on getting those located in there and trying to save as many trees as we can. I'm still a little concerned about the drip line of those trees, and if there was some kind of pervious pavers we could put on that tree that you save in between the drive pavers and the outside, I think that would really help that tree survive. I need to have the street tree probably relocated to the other side, but it needs to be replaced. That tree is just doesn't look very healthy to me, and I'm not an arborist, but it doesn't look very healthy to me. Okay, that's all my comments, and ready to entertain a motion.
Ready?
Yep.
Well, here's my attempt. I move to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Aurora Grande approving conditional use permit 16-003 located at 227 South Halcyon, applied for by Matt Cibula, with the addition of these conditions. One, adjust the ADA parking space to make it fully compliant. Two, reduce the on-site parking by one space to protect at least one, if not more, of the trees, if at all possible. And my expectation is that would also improve vehicle, turnaround. The third condition would be to increase the size of the trash enclosure to accommodate at least one, if not two, of the rolling trash containers. And this last condition, I'm not sure exactly how to get this worded in, because I'm sympathetic with Commissioner Mack's desire to have that driveway as wide as possible and as straight as possible, but I'm not at a point where I'm willing to compromise, the current 22-foot, standard. I don't know whether the measurement is 23 or 24, exactly what that is on that site, but I don't have a problem with the condition of, I'm going to say, altering the location of the driveway as long as it is in compliance with the city, the engineering, design. Hopefully that, the applicant would be willing to do that and make that as straight as possible. But putting forth our best effort to make that as efficient and legal at the same time. So those are the four conditions that I have.
I'll second that motion.
Any discussion?
Now we'll have a discussion.
Well, the discussion is, I'm wondering if for staff, if we need to make the finding for reducing the one parking stall, and just the finding would be that we're seeing this as a mixed-use situation, and that's why we're allowing the reduction of one stall, not just for the tree.
Correct, and I think the discussion that's coming out of the Planning Commission for that purpose is enough. Specifically, I'm looking at the conditional use permit findings. We could modify finding number 3 that talks about the site is suitable for the type and intensity of use. You could add in or direct staff to add in some language that reducing the on-site parking down to 9 spaces given the mixed-use nature of the project. So we can do that if you'd like as well.
And then the discussion is, I was unclear on your motion on whether there was one trash can per tenant, or were you just saying add one whatever, or was it?
my intent, and you and I may not be in true agreement on this, and we're not obligated to be agreeing on everything as we come up in front of here. I certainly don't see an issue with tenants sharing a trash can, given the relatively low use, overall use. But my thinking is, rather than design it to accommodate only the number that are there, designing the enclosure that could accommodate an increase, should an increase be desired at some point. I just see too many locations, typically commercial rather than residential, where we have an enclosure that's designed to hold three trash containers and there's four or five that are there, and inevitably they start procreating and no longer living inside their enclosure, and you know, visually become just really difficult to be with. So my issue was less specific that there was one designated for each tenant and more specific that there would just be adequate for an increased number should that number be needed at some point in time.
And then the last clarification on the motion would be, when we lose that parking stall, that extra parking stall, that we not only save the tree or trees, I don't know if that's a double tree or a single tree, but that some consideration would be given to lengthen the parallel parking stalls as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my expectation.
I see that whole side being cleaned up, the trash, the parallel parking, and the tree can all be saved by the reduction of the one parking stall. I just wanted to make sure that motion was clear.
Yeah, that's certainly the intent of what I was trying to get. Two or three solutions there by, you know, reducing a single parking space. I think we can address two or three items and concerns that the Planning Commission and some of the people in the public have already mentioned tonight.
Just as a comment, I scaled that off according to the plan, and if you reduce, again, if you take off parking space number one and you move two down between the two groups of trees, that gave you 24 feet. And then from that tree back to the trash enclosure was in excess of 24 feet. So it gave you more than adequate room to parallel park there.
Okay, Debbie, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0. 4-0.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I think you get an answer about moving it instead of demoing it.
Matt, do you need a minute?
Yeah, if I could get my 5-minute break, that'd be great.
I'm going to take a 5-minute break here. Okay, call the meeting back to order. We'll go back to public hearing, continue public hearing to consider development code amendment 15001, ordinance relating to small cell to telecommunication facilities, location citywide, applicant Verizon Wireless. Matt, we have a staff report.
Absolutely. So I'll preface this staff presentation as well. So Associate Planner Kelly Heffernan is the staff representative on this. I'm filling in for her tonight, given the holidays. So I'll be going over a lot of the development code aspect of what the project is tonight. The specific tech questions and things like that about the technology of the small cells, I know it's been in front of you before, so you might have a lot of that already answered, but I will be relying on the applicant's representative to address any of the technological questions related to small cells. So I might defer some of those questions, just a preface. So this is Development Code Amendment 15001. There's a lot of background in your staff report about you know, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and the Federal Communications Commission. I won't go into that. You can read that at home or in the staff report as well. But I will go through some of the city's background on telecommunications facilities. So in the year 2000 is when the city actively started planning for the wireless facilities as the technology was starting to rapidly change and we started seeing requests for these facilities go into place. In 2001, the city council actually adopted resolution 3569, which did a couple of different things. It implemented the telecommunications siting and submittal requirements, and this was done to address several different concerns, one being visual impact, one being the radio frequency exposure concerns, site capacity concerns, et cetera. And in that time, we've modified the telecommunication requirements a little bit over the years, but they're still very much in place, but that is part of this whole project as well. Currently, there's 12 telecommunication facilities in the city, most of which are on city facilities such as water towers and things where the elevation's higher and they can see more places. Verizon Wireless is actually requesting to consider an amendment to the development code to allow what we call small cell telecommunications facilities. Their original request was specifically for the Village Core downtown zoning district. The purpose of these facilities is to offload some of the capacity issues related to the high data traffic. So everybody's on their cell phone, they're streaming music, they're sending texts, they're sending pictures, they're live tweeting, whatever. So it's using a lot of data, and what cell carriers have found is that it's actually causing traffic buildup with regular telephone cell telephone calls on their existing facilities. So adding the telecommunications facility specifically in the downtown would offload some of that capacity issue. The specific development code amendment does provide definitions for telecommunications facilities, which are currently undefined in our code, as well as small cell telecommunications facilities. It would modify table 1636.030A to add small cells in that table as being an allowed use with a conditional use permit, and then more to more clearly specify the permit requirements in the public facilities zoning district as well. So adding in that for traditional telecommunication towers, a conditional use permit would still be required in those zoning in that zoning district, but the small cells would require a minor use permit. So the small cells are telecommunications facilities that are limited in size and used to provide targeted capacity or greater service coverage in weak areas. They typically consist of transceivers, antennas, coax cables, power supply, etc. And the benefit of them is that it does allow faster cell service and reduced visual impact versus traditional telecommunications facilities. So this next slide, I will preface it by saying that this does not mean that these images that I'm about to put up are what you will see in the village or necessarily anywhere else in town. Obviously, the technology is changing. Specifically, the village has the historic character overlay, so everything has to comply with that as well. But just to give you an idea of some of the limited spacing requirements of some of these things. So these are actually pulled from a document from the city of San Francisco. You can see a traditional light standard here with the small cell telecommunication facility on top, and then a little equipment box attached to the pole as well. Similarly to this pole, where you have the traditional pole and then a little telecommunications facility as well. And then, again, another light standard with the example. Interestingly enough, if you pass by City Hall over at the City of Pismo Beach and their flag poles, you'll notice at the top it's a little more bulbous. That's because I believe they have small cells there as well. That's what I was told at one point in time. So I might be spreading a lie. But here's the definition of small cell telecommunication facility. That's also in your staff report, so given that it's kind of an overload of text, I'll go ahead and I won't read through that, nor will I read through the proposed definition of wireless telecommunication facility either. But those, again, are both in your staff report as well as in the ordinance that's attached to your resolution recommending approval to council. So one of the things that we're talking about specifically in the VMU and the Village Core Downtown zoning districts are requiring the conditional use permit. And this is for a couple different reasons. One, the CUP really does provide the best means to evaluate the impacts to both visual and historic characteristics in these two zoning districts. And additionally, it does allow the public input opportunity prior to a land use entitlement being issued. So, we hear sometimes that with minor use permits, people ask, well, why wasn't I notified beforehand? That's part of the processing portion of our code. And so requiring a conditional use permit for these facilities in these zoning districts would allow for that public notice prior to a decision being made. With regard to this development code amendment itself, an environmental review, it's been determined to be categorically exempt from CEQA per section 15.33 or 311 of the CEQA guidelines regarding the construction or placement of minor structures accessory to existing facilities. So that goes to speak directly to, you won't see a vacant lot with a small cell on it type of instance. With regard to public notice for tonight's meeting, a notice of public hearing was published in the Tribune, posted at City Hall and on the City's website on November 4th for the previous consideration. That meeting was continued to a date certain of tonight. Tonight's agenda and staff report were posted at City Hall and on the City's website in accordance with the government code, and staff has yet to receive any inquiries on this project. So again, staff is here to cover the development code aspect, development code amendment aspect of the project. I will defer the tech questions to the applicant's representative, but I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you. Are there any questions, staff?
Mr. Downing, the only question I really have is just a confirmation, because I think you have addressed it. This is really going to be changing some of the wording in our wireless cell tower definitions and permitting and things of that nature citywide. And what you're describing is that if an applicant is coming forth to the VCD or the VMU zoning, that will require a conditional use permit and then I'm going to say a hearing in front of the Planning Commission. But elsewhere in the city, whether it's in an industrial area or in a residential area, outside of these two specifically zoned areas, this is something that could be probably handled administratively?
That's correct. So in every other commercial district, it's not covered in the residential district, so they would not be permitted in the residential districts.
Okay.
But in all the other commercial districts, they would be allowed under a minor use permit, which is the administrative route. Again, the thought process is that the visual impact is limited. However, in the special area with the historic overlay district, we would request higher scrutiny.
Very good. I wanted to confirm that was exactly the direction that you were going with that. Thank you.
Commissioner Payne, any questions of staff?
Would small cells be multiple carriers on that, or just one carrier?
I would defer that to the applicant, just in terms of that's a little beyond my tech knowledge.
Okay, and the other one is, if it's on a pole, it's in the public right-of-way, does that become the city's revenue
for the south side?
I believe that depends on who owns the pole. So there are some poles that the city owns and maintains. There are some poles that PG&E owns and maintains. There are some poles that are outside of that whole realm, and I'd defer to the applicant to kind of go over that a little bit more. There could be the opportunity for the city to receive some revenue in terms of in the right-of-way poles, but also, you know, in some of the commercial districts or citywide, we're looking to kind of underground those facilities as well.
So when we're doing these small cell sites, that doesn't necessarily mean they're always going to be on a pole. They can be on the roof of a building.
Correct. So there's a number of different ways that this could work. It could be on a pole, it could be on a light, but it could also be on a building behind a parapet, so to speak, or there have been instances where it's actually been integrated into the architecture of the building. And that, you know, that specifically in the village area, we would get a little, you know, how does this comply with the design guidelines? But they're, you know, again, and the technology is changing, so I would anticipate multiple different opportunities for implementation on these, but I would, I believe the applicant would probably have some specific examples as well.
But at, when it's in the village mixed use and in the view corridor, it would come back to us to be reviewed whether it was on the a pole or on the roof or on the building.
In the VCD and VMU, yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Beck.
Couple questions. Did you say on some of these there's a maximum size? Did you say 6 square feet or something like that? Or?
So as proposed, and let me try and find that specific section of...
I think it said 2 feet of maximum and maximum volume.
There it is.
And I believe that that size limitation has to deal with some of the supporting equipment that goes along with it as well. So the 6 square feet, if I recall correctly, and I'm having trouble finding it, relates to the power supply and some of those other, not necessarily antenna pieces, but those other equipment that has to go along with it. But then I do remember that there being a 2 foot...
It's on page 2 under 16.04070 definitions. The bottom part of that first paragraph, it says 2 feet of maximum volume of 6 cubic feet.
Yeah, so it's in the definition. So small cell antennas shall have a maximum length of 2 feet and a maximum volume of 6 cubic feet. So that was the intent behind that, to try to limit it from being from transforming into this you know, larger of an impact.
So back to the questions for staff, because I do have some for the applicant. Is it the intent of this ordinance to be able to just come to staff and review the proposals with bypassing Planning Commission on some of these things?
Again, that kind of relates back to Commissioner Martin's question. In other outside of the village area, yes, not necessarily bypassing Planning Commission, but keeping it more at the administrative level. We would still report it to you that it's been approved, as we do all other minor use permits, and the public would still have the opportunity to appeal it as well.
Because one of the recommendations I would make is, especially on A, general requirements, 7D, if they're going to use the stealth structures, I mean, that's clearly an architectural feature that I think should be reviewed to make, to, you know, I think that needs Planning Commission review when you do the stealth option. And then the next question, with the example that you had shown on top of a power pole, obviously the city owns that light standard or that right-of-way. Is that a contractual situation that they would be entering in with the city to rent that space?
Correct. So it would be similar to the telecommunications facilities that are at the different water reservoirs and things like that, where we actually do have a contract with the carrier whereby it outlines maintenance requirements, rent to be paid to the city or whoever owns that structure, be it a pole that we don't actually own. And it, That's not to say that they can get the agreement approved and not have to get a CUP or minor use permit. They still have to get that land use entitlement as well. So we actually have a couple that the Planning Commission has approved at different reservoirs and things that we're still ironing out the use agreement for.
Thank you for answering that. That's terrific. The one thing I would be looking at, though, as a concern is the duration of that rental agreement. Let's say we initiated a policy where we want cameras on top of some of these locations. That might be an ideal space. I mean, you don't want to have a 20-year lease on a pole that we may want to have the rights back to in the future.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, particularly given that we are, you know, we're always looking for Operation Blue Watch, trying to expand that as quickly as IT will allow us to. So that's an interesting point. I would make that if, depending on how the Planning Commission ends up coming out on this development code amendment, maybe making that as not necessarily a code modification, but maybe just a policy recommendation to the council.
And then, has any information been given to the staff in terms of the sensitivity of some of the signals and whether it would disrupt other types of users?
There, I believe there could be a concern regarding interference with regular Wi-Fi signals, given the proximity to some of those different wireless routers and things. I will actually punt that to the applicant's representative because I don't know that I'm as in depth as Kelly Heffernan does. So, but I believe there could be a concern regarding that. They do still have to submit the RF exposure reports and any transmission interference reports as well. So there's still that safety net in it, but I would defer that to the applicant.
Okay, because that's pretty much the things that we can't see is the most important thing that we need to talk about. And some of these people in lease situations are leasing a space and coming in with their business, and all of a sudden they set up and can't do what they thought they can do. I mean, we don't want to be taking away rights of particular potential occupants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Just a comment. All those examples are not city-owned poles. And we have very, very few streetlight poles in our Rio Grande that we own. These little ones out here on Grand Avenue in the village are about the only ones, and the ones on top of the traffic signal poles, those are the only ones we own. So when we talk about getting money or leasing them or whatever, on those poles, we really don't have that ability. Getting back to this 2 foot maximum and the volume of 6 cubic feet, I said in the definitions that was referred, that everybody's referred to, but if you go into the Exhibit A, which is the siting requirements, and go to definitions, it doesn't talk about the volume. All it talks about is the 2 foot thing, and I'm wondering if that's just an oversight or whether it's two different, referring to two different things.
No, that's a. Thank you for clarifying that. When you and I had spoken about that earlier, I actually went to the ordinance
definition.
It's on page
3.
Found on the ordinance
in Exhibit A
in the actual development code, it is identified there. But you're, it would appear to be just an oversight that because in subsection C on page 3 of the telecommunications facility siting requirements, it does actually, number 2 says antenna shall not exceed an overall length of 2 feet. But you're right, nowhere in there does it say 6 feet or 6 square feet. So I would believe that would be just an oversight on
okay.
The updating of that document.
Yeah. Well, that Exhibit A is the important one, and the other one is just a staff report. And it says cubic feet. That's one of the things I was you know, square feet, cubic feet, and I was trying to visualize exactly what that meant. I don't have any further questions of staff, and if not, I'll open it up to public. Anybody else want to staff?
I have another comment. I mean, we've just gone through and did the streetscape there on in the village with new light poles. I don't think this aesthetically would look very good to stick 2 feet on top of that. That's why
I prefaced putting this slide up by saying that, in fact, on the way to the meeting from City Hall, I was looking at the light poles, and I expressed this during the staff advisory committee review to the applicant as well. I think given our existing light standards in the village specifically, you're going to have a hard time finding a standard that aesthetically works. It could be in those instances they do kind of end up, we find them on buildings or on the rear of City Hall or something like that, or City Hall or the council chambers once the remodel is done. So, you know, how these end up coming out specifically, we don't know yet, but that's why I prefaced.
Well, I think we should put a restriction on them being on our street lights. I mean, we've got banners that we put on for every holiday, and, I mean, it's not going to look... when we consistently have them down the street, and then you've got one that's got a appendage on the top by 2 feet, it's going to look kind of ugly. I don't have a problem with them putting them on the top of the building or the back of a building where it's acceptable, but I don't think in the village putting them on a pole like that is going to enhance our view corridor there.
Yeah, and I would actually advise kind of maybe not making that drastic of a stance right at this moment, given that the technology is still changing. It could be that it's not necessarily an appendage on the top of the pole. It could be uniform bulbing of the pole down somewhere else, or the technology might change to where they don't actually have to bulb anything out and they can fit it all, you know, in a much more confined space. So, thinking about the different changes in technology, that's part of why the conditional use permit requirement's still there. So that if you were to see an appendage, if appendage was proposed on top of a light standard, you know, that would be something that we would say that doesn't
exactly
comply.
That's exactly why it's a CUP, so we have control over it. If there's no other comments, I'll open it to the public and let the applicant speak.
Good evening. Tricia Knight representing Verizon Wireless in this code amendment request. So the reason that we even got to this point was that previously the village core was prohibited from having any cell sites at all, and that is where Verizon is running into the most traffic. As you may or may not know, most of the existing city facilities, water tanks, hilltop sites around the city limits are pretty well, Verizon is at each and every one of them, or is soon to be working through those leases. And so to answer some of your questions, the number of carriers that each small cell will be able to accommodate is one. So these little 2-foot antennas can accommodate one carrier. And we're really talking at this point, we've got Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, and T-Mobile, and I'll bet you bottom dollar two of those are going to merge eventually. So we're getting down to very few carriers that are available for us as consumers. And then answering your question, going down the line as far as pole ownership. So there's currently one that was approved, a small cell facility out by Red Granny High School. It's already constructed. There's a small cell antenna on top and equipment mounted to the pole painted brown. Pretty innocuous if you didn't know what you were looking at. But that pole is owned by PG&E. And so we worked with PG&E. They have a master lease agreement, and we worked through all of that with them. Everything's mounted to the pole. I think there was 1 meter pedestal on the ground that we had to get an encroachment permit through the city for. This core downtown, the whole reason I was requesting it to be opened up at all is I want it to be invisible. And so I'm going to show you some photos here of things in San Luis Obispo. Right now, Crown Castle is another tower company. Just went through and worked through a master conditional use permit for 6 different city-owned poles down High Guerra Street, because that's another highly impacted area during Farmers Market, during any of the parades and tourist activities. And so they are working through that process now. So these small cells really are the next up-and-coming technology instead of seeing the big trees. But my overall goal for the size limitations, we've been working on this code amendment language and everything with Kelly for about 2 years now, and is to make sure that everything, unless it is completely invisible and you won't notice that building as it looks today as it does tomorrow after Verizon or whoever comes, those are the only instances that I believe a minor use permit would even be a valid request. Anything else visible, even an inch, needs to come back before you. And that includes light standards, that includes building mounts, anything, because there's supplemental equipment. Is that fully screened? You need to have that discretion. And so that was sort of the intent of me even requesting this code amendment in the first place. And then an answer to your questions about cameras. That's a really good point. We just were working through, we went through a year and a half with the city of San Luis Obispo, got our minor or conditional use permit, got to our building permit, and lo and behold, transportation goes, oh, that spot right there, we use that and we reserve that for police communications because they move their cameras around as needed. And so that would be something that would definitely need to be reviewed through the CUP process to make sure, because we can be higher or lower depending on, there's usually a certain spot that police or fire likes to be for their cameras. So we can definitely work around that, but that is something definitely to make note of, that we're not impacting anything that might be needed in the future, to basically just stay out of everybody's way. RF interference, it's not in the guidelines, but there is a standard conditional use permit for telecommunications, a condition of approval, in that we have to provide an interference report. So after the site is built, switch it on, we have to call all emergency services, ask them to go ahead and let us know what their frequencies are, and make sure and issue a formal report stating that there are no impacts associated with interference. The Wi-Fi and cellular run at completely different frequencies, and so it's just like a radio dial. There should be, and we have not had any instances of complaints on any interference so far. So, and then my overall goal, and I'm going to pass around these pictures, was really light standards, I agree, don't necessarily work in the core especially. I think as if we got down further down Grand Avenue, maybe there might be some instances. As you get down into the, off of Grand Avenue, if it was right both from the, where you could go on the pole, but for the core downtown, I just envision buildings, and it would need to be fully screened. So I'm going to pass around a picture here. This is the Anderson Hotel downtown San Luis Obispo, and then there's a light standard in San Francisco, very similar to what you're looking at now, and then some just other vertical features, and you can see that you're able to screen them very well, and that was my intent, was to make them invisible. So it starts at the Anderson Hotel and then just goes down from there. And Sprint is currently at that hotel in that vertical element that you'll be looking at. So once again, I'm here to answer any specific questions, but more the goal was to just be able to open up the option for the core downtown, not to bypass any discretion of the commission whatsoever. So that's where I'll leave it.
Thank you. Glenn, you have any questions of the applicant?
Obviously, if we don't have that, I'm going to say technology by definition permittable, you don't currently have any of these. Well, you have a couple of small cells, I know, in the city at this point. Do you have a list of pending permits or desired locations that are ready to throw into the pipeline, assuming this gets approved by City Council at some point?
There's going to be quite a few. Every carrier is now, and just to sort of reiterate what I think staff has already was sort of alluding to, is that it's not coverage anymore. We can all hold a call almost anywhere. I mean, there's very few spots in this county that I can't hold a call. The problem is really it's that capacity. When we've got an overwhelmed situation, whether it be an emergency or a street fair, you've got that capacity issue, and it's really out of convenience, right? If you think about it, Verizon customers are calling going, hey, I've been sitting here, I can't get my pictures downloaded onto my whatever. And so that is really what it is. And also people that are working out of their homes more than ever and on the road more than ever need that really quick speed. And so this is the new technology. This is the small cell that's getting closer to the user because it's just like a lane on a highway. If there is a small cell here and here, this one gets overwhelmed, that lane opens up, so it just sort of passes it down the way. And they, the jurisdictions are going to, I think, take it as they come. But the bottom line is, the countywide, I've been doing this for a while now, countywide, we are very diligent about the visual impacts. We're never going to be like the places that we see that we don't like. And so knowing that, that's still going to be the goal. And that is one thing the federal government has not taken away, is your right to time, place, and manner. And visual impacts is part of that. So everything comes either before you, unless it's an obvious and visible facility. And you get the discretion to say, yeah, that's something we can live with, or no, not. So, yeah, that's sort of, but there's going to be, I hate to say it, but this is the new technology. So, and you know, more often than not, if there's an influx, that's when everyone sort of stops and says, okay, how do we want to deal with this? The bottom line is, if it doesn't work on a building or on a light pole or on anything, then, you know, you have the right to deny that, and the counties and the cities are still doing that. They're not getting caught in the underneath any, I don't know, whatever, you know, try to take into account all the laws and legislation that has come through, and city council did a very good job of working with us, making sure that, you know, the code amendment was written as such, but the discretion still lies locally. So that was the goal.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Beck.
Thank you for your explanation.
Yeah.
It was real thorough. So back to the interference report. Mm-hmm. You had indicated that you do an interference report.
Mm-hmm.
At the conclusion or the installation, and then you put out the maximum possible signals through there to see if there's any interference?
We do.
So walk me through the steps or the procedures if there is an interference.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you do?
In my going on 15 years of doing this, I've never had that happen, but if it did, the way the condition is written is that the site goes down until you can figure that out. The FCC only releases spectrums like a radio dial so that they can avoid that. That's the last thing they want to do, is start releasing spectrum and having it interfere with police or even AM radio for that matter. And so that is the goal. If it was ever to happen to be where, you know, police or fire or whomever said, we definitely have an interference issue here, then it's time to shut it down and fine-tune and figure out why. Because there'd be a bigger concern, I think, than is there interference, but there shouldn't be. So why is there? But I haven't run into it yet.
Well, my concern is not just the ham radio or the emergency services, but also a business. Let's say a business has their Wi-Fi or whatever technology is going on inside their business. If their business is affected, we need to acknowledge that as well.
Yeah, Wi-Fi and cellular.
And I know you said it's totally different.
The
different frequencies
are very different, and it's a very different type of technology. And so I personally never heard of that instance where Wi-Fi is affected by a cellular frequency, but if you wanted to add some stronger language to a condition or you know, something that would make you more comfortable, I'm sure that would be fine. I just haven't heard of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We just need to stretch that to also you know, establishments that are in business, mm-hmm. and future businesses as well that may obtain that kind of technology, and we want to make sure if there is an interference with their technology that would be
usually
rectified.
They work in tandem, the Wi-Fi and the cellular. If you're getting a, you know, cell phone from Verizon, you can also get Wi-Fi from them too, or Charter as well. So, and yeah, I haven't, and yeah, I understand your concern. I just haven't run into it, I guess.
And I don't know enough about to know. And,
yeah.
You know, if someone puts a satellite dish on top of their business and is offering, you know, the NFL channel, and you're interfering with that. And
definitely can tell you that won't happen. that's totally two different frequencies.
Yeah,
way
I can give you 50 examples of what I'm thinking of that. It's not necessarily just Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no, the FCC is pretty clear on making sure that they don't release anything that could overlap, because you could imagine the complications that could arise from that. So the spectrums are very separate and clear from one another.
Okay.
Yeah, but we also have to prove it in the end. We have to run an interference study to show that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Payne.
Well, I still have a problem with putting them on those light poles, and you're saying it's one carrier on these small cell sites, but if you got approved for being on one of our light poles through the village core, then AT&T come in and get the next one, and Sprint the next one, and pretty soon we've got all through the village. I don't have a problem with them being on the back or the top of a building. Mm-hmm. I just think we should have a restriction of it being on our light poles, because we don't have telephone poles. We're underground. So the only place that you could put it on a pole would be on our light poles, and we just, those are, haven't been in there for that many years, and I'd hate to see, look up, and, you know, we place so much homage to the village core and the historic value of it. I don't want to look up there and see cell sites on every light pole.
That's definitely an option. We, as part of the existing guidelines, the, one of the first things we have to look at is anything city-owned, whether it be a park, a building, or a light standard. And so if you remove that from the options, I just agree with Matt in a way that the technology is changing so much that, you know, eventually could it be even 1 foot, and could it be, you know, the exact same diameter as the pole? Could it be moved down behind a banner so that you don't even see it coming one direction? I would just like to leave that option open to the city. If we came before you with this, with your new light standard, you're going to say no, and you still have that discretion.
Well, I don't see any reason why people why the carrier should go to all the work when we are going to say no, but just like amending the existing cell site ordinance, if the facility or product changes, it can always come back and be amended to include the smaller one. I'd rather do that than have be getting submittals for half a dozen carriers and no place to put them on poles.
I think the SAC would shoot it down first, but it's up. Yeah, that's it's up to your discretion, definitely. I'm just saying, it's city revenue, and it's something to consider. So I'll leave that with you to discuss.
I find it highly unlikely to have them on those 15, 16 foot poles downtown. The 40 foot, 30 foot poles are a little different than trying to put them on a little street light downtown. I'm sorry, were you done before I start talking?
Yeah, I'm just not. I'd like to have it written into the conditions that they aren't to be through the village core on those light poles.
Yeah, I think that the CUP will take care of that. When we were talking about that 6 cubic foot volume, is that
No, that's closer to 4 feet. So you're looking at half of that.
Yeah, but I mean that's where the volume.
The volume is we call it. It's like a can.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay. It's going to hold 6 cubic feet, but it's only going to be 2 feet high. So it's going to be.
That's what I need clarified.
Half of what you're looking at there
is the volume had to do with the antenna, and now I understand.
I'm not sure where they came up with 6 cubic feet, but
Okay. That was just clarification I wanted to have.
Can I interrupt and one other thing? What would be the reason for putting them on our lamp posts? Because they're lower than what the top of our buildings are in the first place. Seems like your highest point is where you're going to want to put them, and that would be on the top of a building.
With the small cells, ironically enough, taller is not better. It's more focused if you're closer to the users down low. And number two, another part of the problem is so leasing, being able to get a lease from somebody, constructability, being able to find the utilities in order to power the facility, making sure that the engineers are happy with the way the network is designed, and then obviously city permitting, making sure that they are amenable and agreeable as well. We've been having a heck of a time finding somebody interested in the downtown core as far as leases. We're not done, and we're going to keep looking, but it hasn't been open doors, that's for sure. And so the light standards are an option. Number one, because they aren't as high, and that is the objective, is to be a little bit closer to the users. And number two, it can be helpful if it is like San Luis Obispo working through their light standards. So that's the reasoning behind that, to answer your question.
Have you approached the city on our new public hearing room?
The
new public hearing room that, I mean, we're not going to be here forever.
No, I didn't even know about it until I went there tonight.
But I was going to say that would be a good location. It's kind of midway between the strip. It's
agreed.
It could be camouflaged easily. There's a tree behind it.
Agreed.
There's a parking lot back there, so it's not going to interfere with any residential view corridor.
Yep.
And there's no reason why the city can't, you know, use that revenue.
Agreed.
On a monthly basis of an additional $2,000 or $2,500 or whatever it is.
Whatever it is, yep.
I'd rather see it there than on a pole. Have you...
We haven't approached them yet, no. No, I will send that back to the leasing folks.
Just a quick question. Mm-hmm. The one that we okayed on Valley Road,
yes.
How effective is that?
It's pretty effective, especially the high school traffic.
That's what I was wondering if it accomplished what you intended.
It definitely accomplished, yes. Definitely offloading some of the traffic for those high schoolers. Yes.
Thank you. Any other comments?
The only comment that I'm going to make, and I like the resolution. I like the modernization. It's interesting it's taken 15 years to get this modernized, and technology is moving and modernizing and shrinking in size way faster than the city is able to modernize their ordinance. I'm comfortable with the ordinance without a limitation on the poles. My gut guess, it wouldn't surprise me that if it ended up on a pole, and I say if, because in general, I have seen these where they're virtually invisible. They're part of a soffit, they're part of a parapet, they're part of an architectural feature that you can't even see. There's so much flexibility in these designs. It wouldn't surprise me that it could almost be integrated into the horizontal bar that's actually holding the light. And so for me to say, I don't want to see one on any pole when a design could come out in a year, or 2 or 3 years, that is visually invisible. It could end up being inside the pole, for all I know, or something gets redesigned, and the operator, whether it's Verizon or whoever has come in, they may say it's worth us to pay for a brand new pole that is, some composite, material where these frequencies can be seen through them rather than having to be an appendage on top of that. But I like the fact that an ordinance can come in, and I'm going to say maybe not the majority, but a significant number of the applications and permit applications can be come in and be handled administratively. But I also appreciate the fact that particularly in the downtown village core in the VMU location, we have the right to review, I think, primarily the visual impact, but if there's other impacts as well, we do have the ability to review that and look at that on a case-by-case basis. So in that regard, I'm certainly in support of this resolution as it's written. Thanks.
When we were talking about the one on Valley Road, there was a discussion about one being put in the shopping center over here. Did that ever come about?
Over by CalFresh? No, that's in Pismo Beach.
That's Pismo Beach, yeah. I don't want to call it the Walmart parking lot.
Oh, okay.
But that's where it is.
To my knowledge, that has not occurred yet. That has not occurred yet. But it could be a good candidate, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Mack?
Can I borrow your pointer?
Sure.
So what I see, the difference between this one and this one, is I see this box has been put here and this has been put on. And my concern is, or in some instances, I hear you can bury them with signs. Is any reason why this can't come lower and be buried with a sign on either side? You don't see it?
It depends on the city. So, for example, City of San Luis Obispo, those are radio units, which are basically just the way that the antennas talk to the equipment, because the equipment's sort of off-site. It runs by fiber to a hub in another location. And they need to be fairly close to the antennas just for the longer you get away, the signal strength of how they communicate drops. So we'd originally proposed, or if you go down Higuera, there's the San Luis Obispo Association, Downtown Association. They have these banners. and we put them behind those banners, and you going one direction, actually on some of them they're back to back, so you put them in between, you don't even see them. As we went through the building permit stage, the association chimed in and said, no, because we don't know what size we're going to need, what if that's because they're going to be there forever, that was reserved for us by the city, thank you, but no. And so that's often what happens, and that's what the ARC and SAC, I imagine, would do, is vet that out a little bit more. But this was all new to City of San Luis Obispo, so now they know going forward if they get approached again what to look out for. But I think that's the answer to that question.
You had made a comment that it's not necessarily how high this needs to be. It's
correct.
Just in the location of the users.
Correct.
Are you suggesting that it can even be at ground level?
No ground level. You do want to have it up above a certain level. You don't want people to be able to walk by it just for vandalism purposes and possibly messing with the equipment. So I think it's above 18 feet some, or 10 feet maybe, somewhere around there. I don't know the exact guideline. But no, you don't want it at ground level. It does need to be up above the users. But it can be lower than that if it was integrated. And
is that because of signal or because of potential people messing with it?
Because of potential people messing with it. There's certain guidelines FCC has of having anything at ground level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I can see a whole industry being developed here where you develop site furnishings, you know, and maybe even incorporate in a bollard design, you know, an LED light at the top and a cast iron bollard, and it's buried in there that you can never even mess with.
Yeah.
But it's kind of buried within the site furnishings. This is my issue. This is not the city of Arroyo Grande. I think pole designs are appropriate in certain areas of the city. Mm-hmm. Like one of your applications for the Soda Sports Field, great. It's a good application for that, or when we do have light standards like this, but I don't think it's appropriate for downtown Arroyo Grande, the village core.
You might have technology that comes about where you won't see the difference between one and the other because it will look exactly the same. And so that's, I think, where technology is headed. And I just don't want the city to, this took 2 years. To get this amendment through. I'm here 2 years from when I submitted. And so I just, knowing what it takes to amend it again, that's all I'm going to say. You are obviously going to discuss and make your own decision. We've come this far. It would be, technology is going to potentially change. Actually, I know it's going to change because the small cell technology is going to have to in order to make it viable for any jurisdiction to be able to approve these.
Can I ask, are you through? Can I ask another question?
Yeah, eventually we'll have a discussion with the planning commissioners. I was just trying to ask some more questions of the applicant. So.
One of the problems I can see about putting them in the village, because mm-hmm. those poles, the light fixture itself sits on top of the pole. And so as short as they are, you would have to mount it underneath there or come up with some device to extend it above it, which would look like not a very good situation. The ideal places to put them are on the poles on traffic signals, because you have the electrical capabilities and the conduits there to run the things, where on a street light pole it may be very limited according to how the electric is configured for the light poles, where the traffic signal poles you can get that pretty easy from there. So if they were to be put downtown in the village core, the ones that would work the best would be on the poles that the traffic signals are on, and not the street light poles.
Maybe making that differentiation.
But I'm sure all that will work out in the CUP, and that's why the CUP is important for the village core.
I just want to ask, on those two poles there, they have that blue and red sign, and then underneath there's another red sign. Are those part of your...
No, those are just part. I'm not quite sure what they're utilized for. That's the only, that right there is the only thing. That and the antenna on top are the only two equipment that is in addition to
the top of the pole.
Yeah, exactly.
Those sign two. That signage doesn't have anything to do with you.
That is correct.
Okay, is there any other questions of the applicant? Thank you. If there's any comments before we try to craft a motion?
Well, I'll reiterate on some comments that thoughts and feelings I have. Downtown Village area, I mean, we're spending a lot of time articulating components, bringing in, smaller lights that are more vintage, if you will. And when you're spending money doing vintage detailing, last thing you want to do is modify that detailing to be something other than what it is by adding something onto it. I'm more of the stealth ideas when it comes to the village of camouflage. Put it on a roof. Put it somewhere where you don't see it, as opposed to right in plain view. Elsewhere in the city, I think it's appropriate, but downtown village, I really don't like what I'm seeing in terms of modification of poles. Now, I know we're also trying to put power poles, which is a totally different issue than the light poles, underground. Eventually, all those light poles, we have an ordinance to put power underground, so I don't think we should be doing it on the power poles either if we're trying to put those underground. So that's sort of my comments with regards to the poles. I would like to see some language, though, or added condition to an interference report or a future interference report with businesses. If businesses are affected, that there's a way that those businesses have recourse to get that corrected. Especially if there's a lease going on, we should be open to that.
Commissioner Martin?
I'm looking at this as a recommendation to City Council, and frankly, I'm willing to take that faith leap that these controls on interference exist and will continue to exist, and I'd rather not get hung up on. What I'm hearing is this anxiety and angst about poles in the village, and what I see is, and what I expect to see is probably 98, or if not 100% of the applications that are going to come in are not even going to be dealing with poles. They're going to be dealing with soffits and parapets and other applications. And not only that, but 100% of the applications that come in with in the village core and in the VMU zoning is going to come for us to review, and I'd rather not be dictating limitations at this point in an arena where the technology is changing to the point where, gee, if it's invisible, maybe installation on a traditional or vintage light pole is the ideal location, and it's invisible, and I'd hate to see us start having, well, we have a code that says they can't put it on any light pole in the village if in 3 or 5 years, technology allows that to happen. We're going to be reviewing 100% of these applications, whether they end up being applied for onto a pole or onto the side of the building in the village core, and I'd rather not be dictating or limiting those kinds of options. I'm in favor of approving the resolution as it sits. If we as individuals want to comment or appeal to the City Council to make some other kind of more direct or constrictive conditions, I encourage my fellow planning commissioners to do it in that way. I'd rather not be over-constricting it. That's my opinion.
What's the current height of our streetlights in the village?
I could not tell you. Unfortunately, I don't have that number off the top of my head.
It doesn't seem like they're that high, and she was already saying they're they put them up 10 feet. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know that we're much higher than that anyway.
It's my impression that we were to upgrade the existing ordinance to govern, make recommendation to the city council to cover small cell in the village core, and by approving this and specifically saying that the village core has to be on a CUP, I think that's exactly what was expected of us, and I'm ready to move forward by doing that. Any other comments?
I'm just not sure the thrust of my comment was understood. There's plenty of poles to choose from. You can even put a pole in the ground brand new if you want. My comment was is taking something vintage or historical and attaching something to it that really doesn't belong. That was the only item that I was trying to protect, if you will.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%, but I think that is covered in by having it required in CUP.
I feel the same way Commissioner Mack does. I think there should be some kind of provision in this ordinance that restricts them from putting them on the streetlights. There's too many there's buildings all along there where you can put them on the roof, and they're varied heights, so it's not like they're all going to be three-story buildings like you've shown in these pictures. I mean, we've got one-story buildings that would then be able to transmit and carry those units. We've gone through so much to redo the rock fence by the middle school and redo the Bridge Street and maintain our swinging bridge to come along and put cell sites on our street lights down through the village core is just asking too much. We have outside of that, you know, I can see it, but if we had, you know, utility poles through there, you know, maybe they'd be acceptable there, but they're not, and I just can't see putting it on our historic vintage streetlights now or any time in the future. It's going to take away from the historic look of the village.
Go ahead.
And I agree with you, and in my mind, that's exactly what the CUP process is designed to address. Obviously, hearing the issues and the concerns, I can't imagine an applicant coming forward today and saying, I want to install one that's going to alter a vintage light pole in the village. There's no way in my mind they're going to get a single vote in support of that. But rather than to say you're not allowed to have any kind of apparatus attached to a vintage light pole, even if it's completely invisible, to me is onerous and starts predicting or limiting the ability for us to look at some and evaluate something in the future. The conditional use process will allow 100% of these applications to come before us for our review and our evaluation and our determination. And I think that's really what the CUP is designed to do, and I'd rather allow the industry to be as creative as they possibly can to make these cell towers as invisible as they possibly can, which my understanding is exactly what their intent is.
Well, having worked in the past on several cell sites on the Hearst Ranch, on their dairy barn, on the fence posts, on putting in pine trees and palm trees, I know that cell site carriers can be very aggressive. So I do have a concern, and I don't think that we need to waste the time of our planners putting together a package for on those street lights when it's going to come to us, and the majority of us are going to vote it down. There's no sense in wasting the carrier's time and money to put that package together and the planners to review it. So I'm just going to say I'm not in favor anywhere else, but I think there should be a restriction through the Village Corps.
I actually have some comments. I don't want to interrupt the commission's deliberation, but I do have kind of just a few comments and thoughts that have come to me throughout the deliberations, if I may. So I do feel kind of bad having put up that slide and having everybody focus on the pole, because really what we're talking about is, you know, the use and the small cells themselves, and these were some examples of how they were going in. To Commissioner Fowler Payne's point just now of wasting city time and resources, if something, for instance, like this were to be proposed on top of one of our existing city light standards, that immediately and in city staff's review would go, that's not compliant with the design guidelines of the district, and therefore we will not recommend approval of this. So that would immediately go back to the applicant to say, this will not be approved. More than likely, I mean, obviously you're independent individuals and you can go away from staff's recommendation if it got to that point. But taking a step back to the bigger picture of the code amendment and saying, are these facilities, okay in this general area? Again, as Commissioners Martin and Keene have mentioned, that is part of the conditional use permit process, and some of those findings that we mentioned in there, I think finding number 3 on the previous project was that it's that site, and in a light pole case it would be the light pole, is suitable for the type and intensity of use. Well, if it's designed in such a way that you have that appendage sticking on top of a light, I would say we would have a hard time finding that finding in favor of that finding. I do tend to again agree that limiting that's why the design guidelines are there. To Commissioner Mack's point of something vintage, or my mind immediately went to Harvest Church, and if, let's say, they were proposing a small cell in the steeple of Harvest Church, the conditional use permit would be where we would look at, okay, how are you mounting this to the steeple? What does it do to the visual characteristics? That being a designated historic resource, we would actually take that to the HRC as well, where they would be able to weigh in on that. So we have multiple levels of kind of review of these things. So I apologize for putting that slide up and getting everybody's mind on kind of focused on that one piece, and I'm not saying that the discussion isn't good. One of the other things to keep in mind, too, is that a lot of these topics that we've covered, such as in the public right-of-way or submitting the interference report, they are governed by the FCC as well. So really we would not be able to implement something, and I'm not saying that we could or couldn't on either of these points. I honestly don't know. But we would not be able to implement, for instance, no on streetlights if it's in public right-of-way and the FCC says, poles in the public right-of-way are fair game, while we can still deny them based on time, place, and manner being you have the appendage sticking on top of a light pole in the village. So that would be something, depending on how the commission comes back, we would take a look at whatever the recommendation ends up being. But I do want to, that's why it's the conditional use permit. It's not the minor use permit at the staff level. It provides the community input. And also, I mean, if Verizon or T-Mobile or AT&T were to bring something like that in, we would immediately say this does not comply with the design guidelines and we will not support this. And most my instance, every time we do that to an applicant, they immediately take it back and revise it. So just some kind of thoughts that I've, again, gathered throughout your deliberations. So.
Thank you. I move we adopt a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Roy Grande recommending that the City Council adopt an ordinance amending sections 1604, 1630.070C and 1636.038A and 1644.040A of the Rio Grande Municipal Code relating to small cell communication facilities and adopt a resolution amending the telecommunication facilities siting and permit submittal requirements and development code amendment case number 15001, location citywide, applicant Verizon Wireless.
Second.
Discussion. I just didn't have an opportunity to speak after staff gave a great explanation there. The question now is, does it automatically go to historical for review?
The purview of the HRC is limited to designating historic resources as well as those that are already designated historic. We do expand that a little bit to potentially historic resources that have already been preliminarily identified through our various surveys that we've done throughout the year. So it wouldn't necessarily directly go to them. That could be just a recommendation that the Planning Commission passes along to the City Council, and it could be added as
part of the policy. So part of the conditional use permit, it doesn't automatically go there?
Does not automatically, no. It depends on the nature of the proposal.
See, I think staff brought up a great solution to my concern that I had brought up earlier and also echoed by Fowler Payne, is that anything vintage or historical should go before the HRC. And if we just added that or amended your motion to include that, it's a done deal.
Yeah, but you can't consider those as vintage because those light poles are not the original ones. They were replaced, so they aren't going to be considered as vintage or historical. So you, even adding that, that's not going to help with those light poles because those poles have only been in there, but 15 years or so.
That's correct.
So they wouldn't fall under that preview of HRC.
That's correct. However, that they still, even though they wouldn't, those specific items, such as the light pole, again, we keep fixating on the light pole, but that would not necessarily go to the HRC. Pardon me for hitting my microphone. However, they still have to comply with the design guidelines, and the ARC does review the aesthetic portion of that in accordance with the design guidelines. So, again, if you have an appendage on top of the light pole, even though it's not historic, I really do not see it moving past staff, let alone through a recommendation for approval from the ARC as well. But, again, those are just my comments.
Well, I saw at a hearing 7 years ago when, probably 20 years ago, when they required an art exhibit to be reviewed by the art commission, and there was never an art commission put in, and they put whatever that brass art piece that's now on Monterey and Napomo Street in the middle of the village, and it wasn't fitting, and we had to fight to get it removed and replaced with that clock. So you can say all those things, but when it comes right down to it, can you really be guaranteed that it's not going to go in there unless you have it specifically stated in these conditions that they cannot go on the light post within the village core?
Oh,
now or ever.
I'd like to call the question.
Any objection?
Have a roll call, please.
Let's see. Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
No.
Commissioner Mack?
No. Okay.
Flip a coin.
Would you change your vote if it just said that on the CUP, if it pertained to the HRC, the building or whatever, that they see it?
I'm going to explain my thought process here so you can all better understand, and for anyone who's listening. Being on the Bridge Street Committee and seeing their participation, they know the history of Arroyo Grande, and they know it really well. They pull out pictures from many, many years ago. And a lot of these details aren't here now today, but they said, well, if you can make it look like this or add a detail that looks like that, it's like bringing our cultural heritage back and some details that have been removed over time. And all I'm saying is if we include them in the process, they're going to be able to give more detail to the applicant and offer even more unique design opportunities or ingenuity or whatever you want to call it to be more in character with Arroyo Grande and downtown Arroyo Grande. And again, I'm only thinking about the village, to include them in on the village, and I think they should be included. And to not do that is a disservice to them. I think they should weigh in. I think they should have the opportunity to weigh in. And if we can amend the motion to include that as a review, it's all for the better.
Would the second go along with that?
I need to hear a motion. Am I hearing comments? I'm not in a disagreement necessarily with the comments.
Okay.
But I need to hear a motion rather than, I'm not going to second comments. I'm happy
no,
to
I'm not
second
asking
a motion.
Well,
I'm
my motion would be to include the HRC in the design solution that's proposed for anything that's proposed within the village.
Now, there's so much in the village that they don't have any jurisdiction over. That's just.
And I guess I could amend that to anything that's visually seen, whether it's on a pole or on a building. I went to say that's a requirement for something that's not seen.
I have a question for staff, if that's okay.
Yes.
Sure. Mr. Downing, this is a recommendation. If we're unable to get a majority vote tonight in order to make a recommendation, would this still proceed to City Council without Planning Commission support, or would it not proceed? What's the typical procedure or process that ends up happening should a no majority emerge tonight?
Yeah, so similar to any other motion that ends in a tie draw, neither of those are right. I'm going to use those words anyway. It essentially acts as a no from the group. So moving forward, it would be a recommendation for no to the City Council, and that answers that question.
But the resolution would still proceed to City Council, and they could so choose in their infinite wisdom to either agree with us on a no vote and deny this change, or they could disagree with our recommendation or disagree with our break our deadlock, if we want to describe it in that way, and vote to either in favor or to deny this resolution. So our inability to get a majority vote tonight is not going to keep this resolution from proceeding to City Council for their review and deliberation. Is that correct?
That's correct. It wouldn't necessarily keep them, but it would be a recommendation for denial of the development code amendment to the city council. One thing that might help, and I hear Commissioner Mack's comments, and I agree, particularly on the Bridge Street Bridge project, the value added from the HRC is very high. It might, and I do apologize that I'm not as in-depthly knowledgeable of the intricacies of all the changes that are specifically the siting requirements. But it could be that the Planning Commission in general finds that these are not bad in the citywide and specifically in the zoning district, but make the recommendation to the City Council that in the Village Core downtown that the HRC, that the City Council direct staff that when one of these comes forward in the Village Core downtown, that the HRC actually be part of that review process as well. That wouldn't, and I say it that way because I don't know necessarily that changing something in the siting requirements would be appropriate. Again, that's just because I'm not as in-depthly aware of that, but that could be a path, a path forward for a positive recommendation from the Planning Commission, but still bringing that kind of caveat forward of, hey, we still have some concerns regarding impacts to historic character or historic historic character of the village by the proliferation of these items. So that could be a path forward, and I don't know if that's agreeable to the Planning Commission or if that gets you in a comfortable enough place to move forward. But again, if it stays at a 2-2, then it would be a recommendation for denial.
Okay, I'm looking for an amendment, or I'm going to move on.
Well, I have a lot of concerns because I'm a historic resident, plus I've lived in the village for 25 years. I've seen a lot of things come through and make changes that shouldn't have been, and we didn't at that time did not have this historic overlay restricting. I've seen historic churches tore down. We have a horrible business district when you enter the village where you've got on one side you've got, you're entering the historic village of Grandy, and on the other side you've got a commercial building. You know, it, to me, if you can make the restriction, I mean, we've made so many restrictions on what goes on in the village. I don't think, you know, this issue is going to make or break Verizon. They've got rooftops and parking lots. There's poles in the parking lots that they could put them on. It's not like we're saying, no, you can't come into the village. I think it just doesn't need to be on East Branch down through the village corridor. And I, too, worked on the other end, on the, I guess it's called the East Branch Extension there at the middle school. And, you know, we went to a lot of meetings and review and what to do there to keep it consistent with the village core. And so I just hate to see anything disrupt anymore that's already there. You know, it's kind of sad to say that I remember when Arroyo Grande Village was a working village, and now it's a tourist attraction. So I don't want to see it defaced any more than it already has been.
Do you want to make
amendment? Yeah, I would like to just amend Mr. King's motion and to dovetail on what you suggested, which is to make the motion to also, when one of these come forward in the village downtown core, that HRC has an opportunity to review the solution before it comes to the Planning Commission, making that recommendation to the City Council.
And that's in form of amendment. I want to just so we can move on, I'll second the amendment, and I'll have a roll call vote on the amendment, and then we'll vote on the revote on the resolution.
Can I clarify that motion just so we're all aware of what we're voting on? So the motion is to recommend approval of the Development Code Amendment as outlined in your staff report, and also to recommend including to the City Council, including the Historic Resources Committee in the review process for conditional use permits in the Village Core downtown for things that are visually seen. You mentioned that earlier. Okay. So, therefore, if it is completely screened or completely melded into something, it would not necessarily go to the HRC. Okay.
That's correct.
So okay. We have a motion and we have a second.
On the amendment.
Are you ready for a roll call?
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
No.
Okay, the amendment passes, and I'm going to another roll call vote on the resolution.
Vice Chair King, can you clarify the next roll call vote on the resolution? Which resolution are you referring to?
The one we voted on that was 2-2.
Okay, so to clarify, the motion was to amend the previous motion to modify that original motion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So, roll call vote.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
No.
Okay. Number 9 is non-public hearing items. There is none. 10 is administrative decisions. Is there any commissioners have any comments on the two that are listed?
Well, we're kind of late on the Christmas tree at RoboBank, so.
And the lateness of the time and notwithstanding, I'm just kind of curious why RoboBank even needs a temporary permit to put a Christmas tree on their own private property. I was just surprised when I saw that, with all the government intrusion we have on our daily lives, a business wants to put a Christmas tree out on their property in front of their business, and suddenly they need to come to the city in order to get a permit. Thankfully, they didn't need to have it reviewed by us, and it could be handled administratively. But that's correct, and I've wondered that myself through the years, because this is the sixth or seventh year that I've seen that temporary use permit come through. So really, it has to do with. Because it's a temporary feature in nature, it does potentially impact pedestrian flow and things like that. It does give the city an opportunity to ensure that pedestrians and vehicles are safe and that sight lines and everything is complied with.
Thank you.
Good question.
It's been going on ever since RoboBank's been in business there.
Well, I think last time, didn't we have to approve the Lighthouse Church to have a cherry stand or something in their parking lot.
Okay. Moving on to number 11, commission communications. Any of the commissioners have any comments?
Merry Christmas and happy holidays is the only thing I want to say tonight. Thank you.
Staff communications.
Absolutely. So, echoing Commissioner Martin's comments. Thank you all for being here. I know it is the week before Christmas, and so there was some question of whether we were going to have a meeting or not. So I do appreciate you making yourselves available. It is looking like we will cancel the first meeting in January, given the timing of the holidays and everything and staff workload. So
Looks like we will be canceling that, but mark your calendars for January 17th, 2017.
Thank you.
Just finally got used to doing 16.
Move for